Hi, and welcome to The Right Stuff. I'm the Queen, Parker J. Thank you so much for joining me for this edition. As you know, every October, I have the honor and pleasure of interviewing Christian authors or authors who are Christian that write dark fiction. I'm also an advocate of Christian horror and Christian dark fiction. And this month, we're going to be talking to some of the best in the business. Today, we're going to be talking to Sean Rainwater. He is the author of the book Hades Proper. This book is an exciting read. We're also going to be talking about Christian and horror, the perfect blend. It's very difficult for some people to understand how they blend together. Sean and I are going to tell you they really do blend and blend very well. I have an exciting opportunity for those of you who want to accelerate your fiction writing career. The Christian Storytellers Club is a membership that serves Christian authors of fiction so they can turn their hobbies into a career and get their story out to the world. We help you create fantastical stories that make an impact in the world and support you financially. The Christian Storytellers Club features education, networking, and accountability. As an author, I definitely understand that you need all three. To get your story out there, why not join the Christian Storytellers Club? Go to ChristianStorytellersAcademy.com. Again, ChristianStorytellersAcademy.com, and find out how you can turn your fictional hobby into a career. As always, we want to thank our sponsors for their support, Christian Book Club, and we want to thank Readio as well for their support. To find out how they can help you, visit their website at readioapp.com and at christianbookclub.net. We want to thank our Patreon team for their support. We have been showcasing Christian authors worldwide for the past 8 years, and as God gives us grace, we'll continue to do that. My newest releases will be coming out very soon. My next release is part of the Blizzard Bride series called A Groom for Agatha. That releases on October 26th, and then I also am releasing the next book in that series called A Groom for Ruth, releasing November 9th. So I'm very excited for those two releases. I do hope you enjoy them. They are part of the Blizzard Bride's Mail Order Groom series, which is doing very well, thank the Lord. So if you want to start from the beginning, make sure you go ahead and go to the Blizzard Bride, written by our series creator, Christine Sterling, and find out what all the fuss is about. Now, without further ado, I'm going to introduce my guest co-host and contributor today, Sean Rainwater. Sean, how are you doing today?
I'm wonderful, Parker. How are you?
I am fine, and thank you, thank you, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to be with us today on the show.
Pleasure to be here.
Sean, now we have met very recently, and we met through your mother, Erin Rainwater, and she connected us together. And what's really cool is that Erin was one of the first authors I interviewed on the show when I started off 8 years ago. So it's really cool that I get a chance to interview her son. So I want to give a shout out to Erin for connecting us together for this show. And let me tell you what brought me and Sean together. I had did a podcast with Creatively Christian Podcast with Jake Dorbins, and he is part of Theophany Media. And I did a podcast with one of his hosts on that show, and we talked about Christian horror, how I'm an advocate for Christian speculative fiction. When Erin saw and heard that podcast, she said, "Oh my gosh, Parker, you should talk to my son. He wrote a Christian horror story, and I think you like it." So I bought it that day, and I read it that day, and I did what I call a live reading, where I'm sharing my thoughts with both Erin and Sean at the same time. I was flying through the book like anything, and it was such a good book. And then I gnawed Sean's ear off for like an hour and 40 minutes when we talked over the phone. I definitely thought he'll be a great guest for our October show when we highlight dark fiction. So Sean, with all that message of me reading your book, Hades Proper, which is available on Amazon.com or wherever books are sold, what were some of your thoughts?
Well, it's a really unique way to hear feedback on it. You know, as an author, you look for your reviews, you know, you look every day and check Amazon for any new reviews coming through. And most of the time they're pretty few and far between. So to have kind of a live feedback from you as you were reading it, it was interesting to see what things about the book and the story were popping out to you what things were scary to you, what things really moved you about the characters and things like that as you were reading it. So it was a unique experience. I enjoyed it.
I was reading so fast that I was reading sometimes and then typing like 5 minutes later because I didn't want to miss a thing. And you can see it like a movie. It has these beats that are very prevalent in what we call disaster horror movies. They have certain beats they have to meet, and then it flips it on its head. And so Hades Proper has that thing that is familiar, but also extremely unique because we are taking a trip to the center of the earth. But what's at the center of the earth, that's what we'll get to in just a few moments. Sean, I want people to know a little bit about yourself. So go ahead and tell us who you are in your own words.
Well, I'm a pretty normal guy. I've had a love for film and for writing for a long time. I wrote my first paper, I think, in fourth grade, and it was, like a 2.5-page paper. And, you know, when you're in fourth grade, 2.5 pages is like writing a novel.
Yes, exactly.
And so even though in fourth grade, it was still a horror thriller, of course, I remember the teacher writing on the top of the page, very good, but very scary. And then she gave me an A+. So I kind of felt like I had a knack for writing, and I didn't do anything with it until later on in life. And in about 2002, I was doing a study of what the Bible says about hell. And I was surprised to find that it has a geographic location. The Bible seems to talk about it as having a location at the center of the earth. You know, it uses terms like, you know, being in a downward direction, talks about it as being the lower earthly regions. And one translation even talking about it as being in the heart of the earth or the center of the earth. Once I kind of saw hell as having a geographic location and not just some far off place that was, you know, in the atmosphere somewhere and kind of in a dream with, you know, red skin guys with pitchforks running around. When you see it as a place that's actually below your feet and actually has a location considerably near where you are, it kind of painted hell in a new light for me. And at the same time, I was, you know, interested in writing and interested in screenplays. And I think it was my mother that actually, you know, mentioned, hey, you should write something. And this story had kind of been bouncing around in my head of, you know, what if you could actually go down to the center of the earth? You know, hell is obviously a spiritual place, but I had the idea of, you know, what if you could go there and actually walk into hell while you're still alive, while you're still on this side of eternity? And what would it look like? And how would people react that never really had a belief in it in the first place? How would the world react to their story if and when they made it back to the surface? So that kind of spawned that. And then, you know, my mom bought me Screenwriting for Dummies, and which is a great book, by the way. And that's kind of where it launched from there. And it started as a screenplay. And then after a while, I decided I would turn it into a novel and self-publish it. That's where the journey all started in about 2002.
What's so exciting about the book is that it really does read like a movie. So you can follow the characters closely. You can follow their motivations, and it's a plot driven. And it has these very familiar beats, as I said earlier, when I introduced the book to our listeners there, that you can grab on instantly. And that actually helps with the enjoyment of the book because you've already following it, but it does take a very unique turn. Some people are probably thinking you are smoking all sorts of things when you say hell having a geographic location. This is something that we can debate on, assuming that that is the case. What should that tell to our listeners about hell having a geographic location? Are we talking about the lake of fire? Are we talking about Sheol? Are we talking about paradise? What are we talking about?
The other part of what I learned doing this study was that Hades, you know, when we think of Hades or hear the word Hades, we think about hell. But Hades actually, before Christ came, and the study I was doing showed that both paradise and hell were both located in Hades. And so you had the paradise side of Hades, which is where the righteous went. And then you had the hell side, which was Hades proper. It talks about this in Matthew, where Jesus is talking about Lazarus and the rich man, and that there was, you know, the man suffering, the rich man suffering in Hades proper. And there was an abyss in between where he was and paradise. And he could see people over in paradise, and they could actually communicate with each other. And so he's sitting there in agony, and he he sees Abraham actually sitting over in paradise, and he calls out to him and says, I want the water to cool my tongue. So that was another fascinating aspect of it, was that up until Christ came, both paradise and hell were next to each other and they could actually see across. But obviously there was an abyss in between, and obviously no one could pass from one side to the other. That really made it a lot more real to me. And I had always believed in hell and believed in heaven, but kind of digging more into this aspect of where hell was and where heaven was just made it a lot more real to me.
And it is a fascinating aspect of this book that I know our listeners are going to definitely enjoy. So make sure you pick up your copy of Hades Proper today on Amazon.com or wherever books are sold. We're going to come back to Hades Proper in just a few moments. One thing about today's show is that I want to talk about horror. Anyone who's known me for some time knows that, surprisingly, with all the things that I like to read and write about, I like romance and I like horror. Those of you who know that Granny is the one who gave us our love for horror. So when I was talking to Sean offline a few weeks back, we ended up talking about horror. And we believe that Christian fiction and horror is a perfect blend. We started talking about horror movies that we like. One of the horror movies that we like, I want Sean to share his and I'll share mine. And we'll kind of compare notes and then we're going to go through the conversation. So what is one of the horror movies that you like that you can tell our listeners about?
My top horror pick would have to be The Grudge.
Seriously? You like The Grudge?
I loved it. It's the only horror movie that I saw that I actually considered for like half a second leaving the theater, you know, because it was freaking me out that bad. And I'm obviously a huge horror fan and love going to the movies, but there was a few aspects of that movie that really creeped me out. One of them was that she can come at you in the daytime. You know, it doesn't, you know, most things that come at you in horror flicks, you're sitting in the dark alone and in a cabin in the woods, you know, and of course that makes it scary. But the girl in The Grudge can come at you during the day. She comes at you when you're with other people. So there's really no safety there. And it's funny because I've told, you know, I've had conversations with people about The Grudge, and I've heard people say, you know, I saw that and it wasn't all that scary to me. And I'd say, really? You know, the scene where the woman's in her apartment and she goes running back under the covers in bed, and then the covers start moving and, you know, she's slowly lifting up the covers, and then, you know, the girl, you know, jumps out at her. I was like, that wasn't making you absolutely freak out. And they would always say, oh, well, I turned my head. I couldn't watch that part. And I'm like, okay, well, of course it's not going to be that scary if you're not watching. So
right. If you turn your head, you missed it, right?
Yeah, and the director, Takashi Shimizu, I think he's just a master at directing horror films. So that's got to be my favorite.
What's interesting, too, about horror, particularly from foreign horror, from U.S. horror, is that they tend to take certain things that are culturally significant to that genre. For example, in a lot of the Korean horror, there's always cracking bones, okay?
Yeah.
Someone's bone is being cracked. Well, that was Japanese, actually, the registered Japanese. But there's cracking bones, and then it's the pale face. Then the body is contorted in these really interesting angles, right?
Yeah.
Then they have long hair, and the hair acts as a shield, and sometimes it acts as a weapon. So they have these really unique cultural aspects that make their horror unique from other horror, like in the U.S. or in the U.K. or the Western type of horror. And then their horror tends to be nature-based a lot because they have different views about nature versus the spiritual realm. So that's why a house can be, like in The Grudge, a house is inhabited by a curse. What's one of your next ones would you pull up, Sean?
Well, this one's pretty recent. And it's not a film. It was a Netflix series, The Haunting of Hill House.
I didn't see that one. Darn it. I did not see that one. But go ahead and tell our listeners about it.
It was really well done. The acting was incredible. And just the vibe that it gives throughout the whole time. And I think not only is it in a, you know, a creepy mansion, but it's kind of the spiritual aspect too, when it comes to that series. It's how it can not only manifest physically and scare you, but how they get into your head and how they can affect you. And really the series kind of jumps back and forth between modern day when all the kids that grew up in that house are, you know, adults now. And then it, you know, keeps flashing back to when they were children, where they spent the summer at Hill House. And it shows how it's very character driven. And it really shows how what they experienced with all the spiritual oppression they had to go through in that house and the things they experienced affected them later in life. So it's not scary as all get out. And there's that aspect to it, but it's also really character driven and about kind of how that their family falls apart because of what happened in that, that summer.
I think that's a good primer for those of you who want to watch it on Netflix. But another horror thing that I liked came out several years ago was called The Taking of Deborah Logan. That is in a subgenre of horror called Alzheimer's horror. In real life, Alzheimer's and dementia are quite horrifying for a lot of people. And
yeah.
They will, I've heard people say, I would rather get shot than to lose their memories of their families. And so it takes that aspect in the found footage style of this woman named Deborah Logan, who is suffering from Alzheimer's and dementia. And there's that evil spiritual connection in there because she's fragile and old, the spiritual connection starts to take her over. And then what the spiritual entity wants. But it's a slow burn that dwindles up and up and up, and it gets creepier and creepier. And you see her change over time. And then towards the end, there is this horrifying scene. And you're sitting there going, oh my gosh, you cannot believe what you've seen. I won't tell anyone what it is because you'd rather enjoy it seeing it behind maybe a blanket or a jacket or somebody's shoulder, you know, just looking over. But I like it because it's multi-layered, because you're following the horror of someone losing their memories. And then you have this spiritual entity taking advantage of that and people trying to fight back. And then, Sean, one of the reasons why I like this movie too is that one of the characters is the smartest horror character I have ever seen. He left. Okay. It got so creepy. He left and survived the entire movie. Right. And you're sitting there going, why don't more of these horror characters leave when something bad is happening? Don't just sit there. Don't keep egging it on. Leave. And so that's one of the reasons why I like The Taking of Deborah Logan as well. So what's another one you can pull up?
Well, I know this was one you had mentioned when we talked a while ago, but Event Horizon.
Oh my gosh, Event Horizon scared the crud out of me. Oh gosh, I watched that behind a brick wall coming from there. Yeah, but tell our listeners about it.
A crew that's a search vessel that goes out to check on a ship that's been missing for years and out in, I think it's near Neptune. Anyway, way out in space, and it's been missing. So they finally get a distress signal from it and they go out to check on it. As they go on, they find just remnants of the crew. They figure out at the end that basically the ship has been to hell and back, literally. Basically the ship has now been possessed by demons, and these entities, these demons are now on board the ship, and they're getting into the minds of all the rescue crew, pulling out their biggest fears and showing it to them. And so it's about them trying to survive that whole ordeal. And it's pretty terrifying.
I want to transition this conversation because we can be entertained by horror, but there's another element to horror that we should talk about, because Christians are saying that horror does not have a place within the Christian fiction mindset. So I do want to address those concerns, and I want to address those concerns with movies that Sean and I have noticed that have given us weird feelings, or rather a disturbance of those movies. So I want to talk about that, because I think in this light, Christians need to be discerning and need to be aware. So let's talk about that. Let's talk about entertaining horror as opposed to things that are disturbing on a spiritual level. We both mentioned horror movies that some of our listeners may actually crawl up the wall and say, I can't watch that. I can't believe you and PJ are watching that. I'll never talk to you again. That's fine. But we can be entertained by it. We can get the thrills and the chills that come with the movie. But we understand it's a story. We also understand that it's meant to be entertaining to an extent. But there's one aspect of this that we need to be aware of. That's the spiritual aspect that goes on behind the creative mind of someone's imagination. Now, here is where me and Sean differ, and he's going to talk about it from his point of view. But I saw a movie that he saw, and he had a completely different reaction to it than I did, and that movie is called Hereditary. Let's talk about Hereditary, Sean. First, give a quick synopsis of what it's about, and then what really made you understand the spiritual warfare aspect of the movie.
So, yeah, my wife and I went and saw it in the theater shortly after it came out. And, you know, I'm a horror fan, and I'm open to all horror movies. There's only been two in my entire life that really made me regret going to watch them, but Hereditary was one of them. There was something that I just felt attached to the movie, something perhaps demonic attached to it. My wife and I both, and we talked about this later after, you know, we got out of the theater, that we both just got extremely uncomfortable when the movie started, and we didn't really know why. As it went along, there were some things in it that I just found that I wondered how they got even past an R rating. Like, but then there was a big cult aspect to it, especially towards the end. There was the scene with the pagan worship and in the treehouse and all that kind of stuff. And it gave me a feeling that it was more than just watching something on the screen that was inappropriate or maybe, you know, pushing towards anti-Christian values. It gave me the feeling like there was actually something in the theater, you know, that it had something negatively attached to the film. And then weird things started happening. You know, my wife and I walked out of the theater and we're talking about it, and we almost got into a major car accident pulling onto the highway out of there. And there was just an overall feeling of dread kind of that came, you know, with the movie. So yeah, and there was only one other film that I got that feeling from. And that was one from a while ago called Silent Hill, you know, it was based on a video game, but you know, it was showing on screen were disturbing, but I mean, sometimes that's kind of the point of going to see horror films. It was more than that. It was kind of a spiritual feeling attached to the film itself and then watching it.
Now, what was fascinating when I heard you say that, Sean, we were talking about it, I had watched the film Hereditary and I didn't sense that at all. And so, but I actually gathered to it being in my home. Okay. Because I watched it at home. I wasn't in a venue, like a theater. You may say, what's the big difference? And I think because the Lord is here, I'm protected. You know what I'm saying? So I didn't see that. Not that you weren't protected either, Sean. I don't want to imply that, sure. You know, but I think that has something to do with it too. But then, and people are going to look at me funny when I say this, I got freaked out with Frozen. Okay, because at the beginning of Frozen, I could not get past the weird chant at the beginning of the movie, right? I could not get past it. And even throughout the whole movie, I'm going, why do they have a chant at the beginning of the movie? And people were raving and raving about it. And when me and my husband, again, we saw it at home, we're like, I don't get it. You know what I mean? Like, okay, the movie's fine, but I don't get it. And mind you, Frozen's not a horror movie, but it was just that disturbing feeling that came with the movie. And I don't think these things are to be ignored. I don't think they're to be ignored at all. So it comes to us where some Christians definitely have a concern about being careful with our imagination, because they already say, well, you and Sean are watching horror films and you shouldn't watch horror films at all. And then here we are saying, well, yeah, we were disturbed by a couple of horror films that we saw, but we still like horror. And you're like, but that's not possible. Well, it is possible, because horror is a very interesting genre that is used to show the human condition. And it shows it in so many unique and interesting scenarios. And so let's talk about how Christianity and horror do blend together.
Well, I think you put it perfectly when you said it about the human condition, because we wake up every day and we open our eyes and we have forces that are against us. You know, the Bible is really clear on this, but I don't say that to scare people. I say it because we need to know our enemy. And the Bible's clear about that. You know, in Ephesians 6:12, you know, for our struggle is not against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, the authorities, powers of this dark world, and against the spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly realms. There's a lot of other verses that talk about being on our guard, the devil wandering around like a lion looking for someone to devour. So the scripture goes out of its way to warn us about this. And I think what horror does is that it allows us to kind of bring the darkness out into the light in a controlled way to kind of shed light on the forces that are out there, whether it be demons or Satan or forces of evil in the heavenly realms that the Bible talks about. There's forces out there that are always trying to get at us, and they do that by trying to get into our minds, and they know the human condition. They know things that are weaknesses and that can potentially bring us down. They're always after us. And so I think what horror does in an artful way, some of the reason we go to see horror is to just be scared, because we can be scared in a controlled environment where what we're watching is not real. And we know that, but we can still get that adrenaline rush and that excitement from being scared. But it also, you know, sheds light on what's out there and what they're capable of. And so I think it's really valuable that Christians watch horror. And I think that's why it's a perfect blend. You know, everything spiritual comes from the Bible. You know, most everything that's evil comes from Satan and comes from sin. And so if you're talking about things that, you know, horrify us, it comes from these forces of evil that truly exist out in the world and that we need to be very aware of. And I think writing horror and watching horror allows us to kind of face those things.
I think that's a good way of putting it, that it does give us a chance to face these things and put it into a context of understanding that we are in a battle for our souls, and there are evil forces out there. Like, evil is real. It is not a figment of our imagination. It is not a social construct. There are things that are truly evil out there. One of the things that happen in Hereditary is that they bring about this demonic force or whatever toward the end of the movie. And one thing that I was watching, as I was watching Hereditary, I always try to put a Christian context or construct in it, you know, or put some kind of analysis on it. And I said, that's what Satan wants to do, is make sure he destroys you. So there's no chance for you to even have any sort of redemption. There's no chance
Absolutely.
For you to do that. And so one of the things I hate about horror, though, in one sense, is that, especially when it comes to like spiritual horror, like Hereditary or something, evil seems to win, or the people have to go through all this rigmarole to subdue the evil. I remember talking to a couple of pastors who have been effective in spiritual warfare, and it's not rituals that they do. It's not, you know, get the blood from over here and some sacred chalice that does whatever. They literally say, in the name of Jesus, I rebuke you. And it's over and done with, you know, right? It's done with. But as one of my author friends said, but that wouldn't be as entertaining to see it on the big screen.
Right.
It was that simple. We want to have the drama of it. A lot of the horror is not uplifting either, particularly nowadays, as it's gotten more nihilistic. It's not uplifting. It's just, oh, evil wins. The guy dies. The girl dies. The being comes to life, whatever, what have you. And so what I would like to see Christians do, Sean, is showing horror in the context where it's inspiring, where evil does not win, where evil actually is defeated. And one of the horror movies that did that, it was a trilogy, was Hell House, LLC. Did you see that by any chance?
I didn't, no.
Okay. It's a found footage flick of stories, found footage style. And it shows the first two movies, you're like, oh, okay, I know what's going to happen. The third ends on a completely interesting twist, but it ends on like a happier note. You know what I mean? And I mean, of course, it has horror elements in there too, but it ends on a happier note. And I would love to see Christians take captive the genre and show, first of all, the power of God is not complicated, that Christ, you know, wherever the Satan does, however it looks, God does it much better than that, you know, it's
right.
easier than that. Because think about what the Bible says, too. When the Lord encountered these demonic forces, they were scared. They weren't sitting there going, I'm going to beat you. No, no, they were scared. They said, have you come to take it, you know, take us out before it's time, you know?
And right, was, even when it was 10,000 against one, yeah. they were still scared.
Yeah, I mean, so that's the God we serve, that demons tremble. I mean, what do you think he meant by that? So I would love to see Christians take hold of that and show it. I mean, give us the thrill, you know, give us that thrill. Give us the spine tingling sensation. Go ahead and give us that. Go ahead, give us that, you know, but then give us the inspiration behind it, that no matter how dark the dark is, the light shines brighter in that darkness. That was one of my good friends, his publishing company's tagline at the time was, the light shines brighter in the darkness. And it does.
Well, I think you're right. I think you know, it has become really nihilistic. Obviously, there's some of horror, you know, some of a horror story that has to be that way. It has to, you know, show the dark side before it shows the light. But I think you're right in that a lot of it nowadays is just dark, and it ends with the demonic force winning, or, you know, the spiritual apparitions taking out the family that it was after, you know, suicides, things like that. And I think you're right. You know, the dark part is there. And like we were talking earlier, you know, that's part of exposing demonology. To do that, you have to do it realistically. So, you know, there's people out there that are in really dark places right now, and they're really getting preyed upon by these spiritual forces. So I've been one of them many times in my life, where you're just, and I know, you know, listeners out there know the same, where they've been at the lowest place of their life. There's this veil, or this feeling that something's trying to come in there and finish the job and take you out. And that's very real. So we have to show that, and we have to bring that out. But at the same time, the point you just made, Jesus is so much more powerful than all of it. And if we have Jesus, yes, we have to be aware of these forces and how powerful they are. But what we have is so much more powerful. And in the end, evil loses. And so I think it's a good blend of, you know, bringing these things into the light, but then showing that as long as, you know, we have the Lord on our side, then we win in the end. And it doesn't have to be in the end too. We can win right now.
I love that, Sean. You said it don't have to be at the end. We can win right now. Yes, that will preach, brother. Oh my gosh, that will preach. You know, and that's what I'm saying for our authors out there, such our Christian authors and Christians. I want you to ignore someone who tells you you cannot write in this genre, because I've said this before, Sean. I have seen authors get bullied out of writing speculative fiction. I've seen it. And you get so angry because someone else has a knee-jerk reaction to something they are uncomfortable with. And then you meet someone who gets it, and you're like, oh my gosh, you get it. But then that person's no is greater than that other person's support sometimes. And you allow yourself to be carried away into someone else's comfort zone instead of coming out of your own comfort zone. And so I appreciate that you said that too. And so we're talking about dark fiction and horror in general. We're talking about how Christian fiction can be a wonderful vehicle for horror. We talked about your book, Hades Proper, and there is a terrifying scene in Hades Proper that I didn't see coming, and it's not quite what you think. It's not quite what you think at all. And when I shared it with a friend of mine at church, I was talking about your book to my girlfriend at church, you could see her get pale. I saw her get pale, like, whoa, that was quite terrifying. And it's not what you think. So it's not like the book's super duper scary or anything like that, because you didn't make it where, you know, we got to run under the bed or anything. It's more of a book that's extremely thought provoking. Like, what if you could see hell and you're still alive and you can visit it? What would you see? What would those things look like? If you are not a believer, but you saw it for yourself, how would that change your perspective of a life? See, so those are the thought-provoking questions that come with this book, Hades Proper, which is available again on Amazon.com or wherever books are sold. So, Sean, the other thing that you mentioned about this book is that you had turned this from a screenplay into a book. Did you get any feedback about Hades Proper as a screenplay?
Yeah, along the way, I actually got it to the hands of a couple Hollywood executives. One guy was with Blumhouse at the time, and I actually still have it. He sent me back. I was only able to get him my log line and synopsis, but he wrote me back about, you know, two full pages of his comments based on the synopsis, and basically said he loved the story. It had a different twist to it. Yeah, he thought it was a great story. The scope was a bit too big for their business model at the time. But yeah, he thought it was great. That was one of the pieces of feedback that kind of kept me going back then, when, you know, you're trying to get your idea out to everybody and it's almost impossible to get it on the desk of on anybody's desk, much less somebody who's a decision maker that can, you know, push it forward and turn it into a movie and actually get it made. But, yeah, some some good feedback along the way.
You do have some other news to share with our listeners. Go ahead and share it with us.
Yeah, well, I wrote a second book that's not out yet, but at the same time I was writing that, I was also putting together the screenplay version for it. And it's called The Weight of a Void. That screenplay was actually just optioned by a company in LA called Bridge and Acorn Entertainment. And so they're looking right now to secure funding. And if all goes well with that, we'll be off and running. And I think right now it has a planned production date of May 2022 with the hope of getting it out by Halloween of 2022. And if that doesn't come together, then it would be the goal to get it out by Halloween of the following year.
Exciting times for you, Sean, isn't it?
Pretty exciting.
Oh, wow. I'm so happy for you. Congratulations on that. And I know that is music to some of our listeners' ears, is the idea of taking their book, being turned into a screenplay, and then having that on the big screen. And so, Sean, when that does happen, would you come back and just tell us that whole experience about having your screenplay turned into a movie for Halloween?
I'd love to.
Oh, that'd be so much fun. Now, Sean, we are at the end of our show today, and the few moments that we have left, can you tell us how we can get in contact with you online?
I'm on Instagram at SeanRainwater_writer, and then I have a website, SeanRainwater.com as well.
This show is always about encouraging authors whom God has given the gift to write to pick up the pen and do so. And the few moments that we have left, go ahead and encourage those authors out there today.
It's most always a long road when you first decide to start writing something. I mean, it's a one in a million chance that anything's going to happen quickly, so it can get very disheartening. My recommendation is just don't give up on it. Even if you have to squeeze in an hour of writing, you know, after your day job and you're exhausted before bed, you know, do those kinds of things and just keep praying about it, praying about God's direction for your writing and the kinds of things, the kinds of stories that he wants to put out there. Just don't give up, you know, keep looking at all your options. There's a lot more happening nowadays. Whereas I think, you know, back in the day, you know, you pretty much had to get a studio to look at your work, and that was nearly impossible. One of the big studios. And now there's so much more happening with independent films. The company that just optioned mine is, you know, they've just made several films and they're really growing as a company. There's a lot more opportunity out there with independent filmmakers and you know, distributors. And there's a lot more ways nowadays to get your work out there. So you know, just don't give up on it.
Sean, thank you, thank you, thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule to be with us today. And I cannot wait to have you back and have you back real soon.
It was a lot of fun. Thanks, Parker.
And we were talking today to Sean Rainwater. He is the author of the book, Hades Proper, available on Amazon.com or wherever books are sold. One of the things that I love that Sean said today on the show is that he said, you don't have to wait until the end to win. You can win right now. If you are dealing with being down right now, because horror really takes the fact that we are in the dumps or we're dealing with some horrible things in our life, whether it's repressed memories or abuse, whether it's someone who has been cruel to us, whether it's spiritual warfare. What Satan wants to do is bring you down and destroy you in that moment. But God is so much more powerful than Satan, so much more powerful than anything bad that can happen to us. And we call the name Jesus. He is strong enough to get rid of that demonic influence, of get rid of that unforgiveness in your heart, get rid of those memories. He is so powerful. And that is the inspirational part of this story, is that evil does not win in the end. Christ wins. And that's something we can definitely hold on to. Thank you so much for joining me for this edition of The Right Stuff. I'm the Queen, Parker J, and you have a wonderful, absolutely glorious, blessed day.